Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-host.
Tepok.
Be a homeowner to take advantage in this special offer. If you were interested in having this system installed at no cost to you, then please press 1 now. Once again, press 1 now. Otherwise, please press 2 to be removed from our calling list.
All right. Hello, listeners. Welcome to episode 214. I am the Me and Team, and today I'm joined by regular co-host Dan Q.
November? Try Yesvember.
Makalua?
No, November. No. The Christmas decorations are already up in some places. What the hell?
Mad Dijon?
It's not Yesvember. It's Movember.
Finally. Is it working?
Perfect timing. Wow.
And just as you heard, we are joined by co-host Step Rock.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, this is Tim, also known as Mazeppa PZ, and just wanted to give a comment. I love Civ, love podcasts, and love Moments of the Polycast podcast. The recent discussion in 211, taking stock of the Arabian civilization in Brave New World, is the type of comment I love. Experts providing insight into the strengths, weaknesses, and strategies of different aspects of Civ. What I don't enjoy, however, are pedantic criticisms of the game itself and discussions of whether or not different things are OP. This might be compelling if I were actually employed by Firaxis, and I do appreciate that some of you actually do have the ear of game designers. That's great, but for me, critiques of the game, breaking down what is OP, unbalanced, and what might be better designed, is kind of like listening to an abstruse splitting of hairs about the rules of football or some other sport, as opposed to the fun of actually watching a game. So with the upcoming release of Beyond Earth, we have the opportunity for a fresh slate, a chance for discussions about exciting aspects of the game, which is going to be new for all of us. So imagine my disappointment on number 611, hearing a snippy argument about over whether a base station's granting the new technology is OP. The game's not even out, and we're already bogged down and barking up the same old trees. So please help me to learn how to discover new ways to enjoy our games. Thanks. Tim from North America, Mazeppapz. Thanks.
So we received this voicemail back in October and before Beyond Earth was released, seeing as how he mentioned that the game wasn't even out yet. My response to his email, hi, Tim. On Polycast, we work to balance coverage of the Civilization series. This includes not only strategy for what is in a game, but also the circumstances that led to the strategy coming about in the first place. Your sports analogy is apt. We believe it is important to question the nature as well as the content of the rules for the influence even determine play on the field. The BE station topic is one that generated much discussion within the Civ community, which was a primary reason why we covered it on the show. We worked to present all recognizable sides on the issue, ultimately concluding that determining if something is overpowered or not must follow the game's release in order to be realized. For a significant portion of our audience, including ourselves, our enjoyment out of Civ comes about from a number of efforts, including raising concerns in a constructive fashion that itself is intended to generate discussion, reflection, and feedback. And I'll add here, we got feedback from you on this, as a matter of fact. So this includes for developer Firaxis Games and its publisher 2K Games as an expression of, you know, shared ownership in how games in the series are regarded and shaped. Now, at the same time, our enjoyment also comes from challenging ourselves and each other to improve our gameplay as the games are. That all said, I do believe our position and yours can continue to coexist. Our show notes are detailed and specific with timestamps, which means that when you come across a topic that you do not find to your liking, you can move past it and onto one that is. I hope that we can continue to count on you as part of the Polycast audience. Tim said that I am honored to receive such a thoughtful response. I wouldn't have written to complain if I didn't have such admiration for you and your other panelists' obvious expertise. He concluded with, I'll leave you with one more thought. When you complete an episode, quickly review the content in your mind and decide if, on balance, it would sound to a first-time listener as if you all liked the game and were enthusiastic about it, or rather, the number of criticisms would convey an overall sense of disappointment in the series. The stronger the score, this is in quotation marks, in the first category, I'm guessing, the more enjoyable that episode will be for listeners. I don't know about my fellow panelists here, but I think that discussing criticisms shows that we have an interest in the series. Yes, we have an opinion, and perhaps you hear some more negative criticisms just because there's a stronger emotion involved, but I think it comes about if we are criticizing and we're being constructive about it. If we just kind of said what the criticism was and then just blasted the game, you know, insert some explicatives here, and then moved on, then maybe our rage is kind of final, but our hope in constructively criticizing is that even if things are not changed in the immediate future or ever, at least we feel we had the opportunity to engage with Firaxis, engage with 2K, and engage the audience to let people know that if you're a Civ player and you're feeling that this is not working, you're not the only one.
First and foremost, a lot of it comes from the community. So when the community itself is having a major 20-page discussion over on CFC about whether or not this thing's OP, it kind of follows that we might want to pick up on that because it's something that not just us are having some discussions about. On the specific note, I will point out that the game did not launch with the station giving the free tech, so it's not like Firaxis doesn't listen, though I doubt it was to us because, you know, who listens to the show?
No, wait a minute. There's a difference between giving credit to the show and giving credit to the outcry. It's possible that it got fixed because of the outcry, not because that we also mentioned it on the show, but it certainly didn't hurt.
Yeah.
Or maybe it did. I don't
know. Who knows? So part of it could be also that we're bringing up to a larger audience because not everybody goes to CFC that watches the show. So those two groups might not overlap. On top of that, there's a bit of question on credibility gap. Because if the only thing we focus on is the nice and cool stuff, the stuff we like, then we, especially myself and the main team who do other sort of things, start looking a lot less credible in the eyes of our viewers. Because if the only thing we say is nice stuff about things that we're doing, then I know personally I'd have a lot less viewers. If all they hear is a mouthpiece for Firaxis or 2K, then we might as well not exist. And at least that's my opinion on that. So on the balance, we do need to talk about other stuff. As for the whole question of rules versus gameplay, Civ as a series is about strategy, is about the rules. Playing Civ is just as much about the rules of Civ as it is about the gameplay of Civ. There are lots of people, I know I don't tend to do a huge amount of playing with the rules, but the main team and a lot of people on the forums who will go down to the map and do all the little tiny detail calculations to find out what's better than this and that, that's all about the rules. And that tells you what is good gameplay according to the rules and what is not. And there are a lot of people who compete, and especially in multiplayer, if one person knows that this set of rules when put together is broken, they're going to win a lot more than somebody else who might just not really understand it as much. So for us, for this particular genre and this particular game, it really does matter. It'd be kind of like, if we want to go back to football, that somewhere along the way, there's this little rule set that says that you can just hand off a free ball onto the field if you drop it. You know, stuff like that kind of matters. Rules matter. For our show, it's not just the what cool features are in there or what people are talking about, but it's also the game itself. We need to have that discussion because it does come up in our community. And if our community is talking about all of these things and we're not, then we're not really doing a podcast for our community.
I think the important part with those kind of discussion is that it must be constructive criticism. Like in the example of the station at the Blue, it was changed. There was a problem with it. And so discussing it was actually useful. It wasn't just complaining for the sake of complaining.
Yeah, we do a lot of that too, but...
Yes, sure.
Sometimes we just have a thing and we just have to complain about it, but we are trying to be constructively criticizing them. It's just sometimes we pull our discussions from the community, therefore it's something that the community has already noticed and said, hey guys, we think there's a problem. So we discuss it. We may not agree, you know, even within ourselves or even in total with the community stuff, but we know that the Phyrexians listen to the podcast and it puts these issues into their head that, no, maybe we need to look at that. We're trying to help make the game better because we like the game, not because we want to sit here and go, oh, it sucks, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, Phyraxians listen, and they're even on the show from time to time as well to engage with us and to engage with the audience. And Mackie makes also an interesting point and a good point about we don't always agree on the show on particular issues. We usually agree that this is an issue and we should discuss it, but we don't always agree on what our opinion should be. And it is true that when we raise community issues, there are times that we will, shall I phrase this, sanitize. Or sometimes we will take what is anything but a constructive criticism and try to find that diamond in the rough and turn it into something constructive. So we cut out the BS, we cut out the noise, and then we try to give voice to, again, all sides of the issue. I'm not going to say both sides of the issue, because so often there is more than two sides. And, of course, one of the options is always just mod it. But short of that...
Dan likes to polish turds.
As Matt said, I think it's also Phil and Matt represent themselves, but they also represent Polycast. So if they go and they say something on a forum, or Mackie and I do the same thing, if all we were doing was looking at the bright side and not looking at the dark or the darker side.
Yeah, people need sunshine blown up there, you know what. I mean, there are places to get that.
Oh, easily.
Welcome to the internet, and perhaps even literally, I don't know.
You know what I mean, though. If you want the kissy-kissy, oh, the game is great and spectacular, la, 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 there's places to do that. We're trying to be somewhere in the middle. We like the game. There's things we love about the game, but there's also problems. No game is perfect, not even Civ, Dan.
This is also a strategy podcast. I mean, it's normal that we are discussing the kind of the intricacies of the game. We are the people who enjoy the game by playing it a lot. Some would say maybe too much. And so we analyze every little thing about it. That's also, this podcast is supposed to talk about those things, even negative things.
Yeah.
Yeah, if there's an exploit thing that you can overabuse, we should talk about that. We're not trying to pick on every bad thing about the game, but those are the things that are going to come up more quickly than the more little intricate strategy things, which, I mean, Beyond Earth's only been out a few weeks, so not everyone's been able to dig into it and see all the little things. So right now, of course, we're going to concentrate on the obvious problems, like stations spawning right where you want to put the city. Dang it. But it's things that will disappear. You know, if you listen to us when Civ 5 first came out, I'm sure we had similar things. It probably sounded like we didn't like the game, but we did like the game. There's just a few things that needed to tweak, and then it would be great. That's all we're trying to do.
As people go on, build out strategies, and that's sort of the stuff that we want to talk about, because some of the strategies are built on game rules. So it's important.
We had feedback from episode 213.
First from Magma Dragoon, I love villains. Talked in episode 213 about, in part, the lack of backstory, established backstory, official backstory, I guess we should say. But then also the question and the comparisons between Beyond Earth and Alpha Centauri, and having defined leaders and defined factions and good guys and bad guys, and heck, even comparing it to Civilization V leaders, where there's some historical context and some game context as well, because unlike in real life, Gandhi is a warmonger in the Civ series and has been for some time. Fabio1701 said, I disagree on the point brought up about no bad guys. I think there should be some bad guys. Attila and the Aztecs, okay, so Attila and Monty were obviously baddies in Civ 5. Yang was obviously bad in Smack. Pravin Bal was obviously good. Now, obviously, there are shades of gray, but sometimes I want to be a bad guy. Art could be considered bad, but it could be considered good. It doesn't have to be the evil Omnicorps. It can be a benevolent profit-sharing co-op. I don't see that there are any obviously good or bad guys in Civilization Beyond Earth, and that makes me a bit sad. Even Brazil is just Sparta, which could be in the good. And I guess that comes down to personal opinion. If you want to find quote-unquote good and bad from the outset, at the very least, when you start the game, this person has a good history and a bad history.
Yeah.
And then depending upon how you play that Civ or how that Civ otherwise plays out in the game, maybe they continue to be good or they continue to be bad. If that's how you come into it, you're not going to be satisfied with it. That was a design choice. And I personally like that, but I also hear the argument that if you wanted a bit more lore,
yeah,
set lore, as it were, in terms of the good and the bad, then you're going to be disappointed in that respect. But I don't think personally that takes away from the game. It's just important to know that that's how it is from the outset and that's how it was designed.
Yeah, this is actually a big difference between Beyond Earth and Civ 5. In Civ 5, civilizations are already defined because they exist, whereas in Beyond Earth, some people complain that the leaders are bland, but that's also because you're supposed to yourself define what they are, and that's also, you know, choosing the options at the beginning. I mean, it's just a big difference in the game, how they work.
Yeah, I mean, there is little bits of lore here and there that pop up, but yeah, in general, there's a lot less atmosphere around the game than there was in previous versions.
Yeah. And I agree. I kind of like that. If you have a more defined character one way or another, not necessarily from a guaranteed lore standpoint, I think the ability to sort of guide them in the game is important as well, but man, there's just something about the game when you have characters with really emphatic personalities, but it's hard to do that well, and most games really don't.
Yeah, one of the reasons Alpha Centauri had that is because they specifically set up a backstory that led into how it got there and how these leaders were on the trip coming to the planet. You know, we don't have that in here. But I remember also in the panel, one of the Phyrexicon panels, they did say that they wanted people to look at these future versions of their countries and be able to feel good about what they've become, which marks the future version of America that I don't know if that's good or bad.
Yes, I succeeded. Yeah. Wait, what? Oh, sorry.
Oops.
Yeah, but, you know, I could see if you were from Brazil, that Brazilia would not be a bad thing, or if you're from France or Spain, you know, Franco-Iberia is not, well, okay, maybe Spain wouldn't be so happy about Franco-Iberia, but...
Fine, it's
fine.
It's Franco.
I figured you'd say it was fine.
Unlike in traditional Civ, where you are, in a way, you are rewriting history, if they had a formal backstory, then in a way you'd be rewriting the future because it hasn't happened yet.
You did in Alpha Centauri.
Exactly.
You know, that's my other, you know, I'm going slightly off topic from that, but what is one of the other things is about the leaders being bland. I could play any of them. They don't feel like they have a specific leaning anyway, even with their bonuses.
Yeah, that's a bit of the difference from Civ 5, mm-hmm. because with Civ 5, even though there was more leaders, each of them had bonuses towards something, like the different victory conditions or a play style or something, and therefore playing each of them would be different, whereas with Beyond Earth, what you're really trying to do is extending it beyond just the leader base into your cargo choices, into your spaceship choices, blah, 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 and into the affinity choices early on, so that you can play the same faction, but with different choices and have a completely different gameplay. Versus Civ 5, where, you know, you play Monty, and if you don't play Monty's strengths, then you're going to have a problem.
You're crippling yourself.
With here, you define the strengths.
Yeah, I think that's part of the source of this topic or complaint or whatever when it comes to the characters, too,
yeah.
though. You know, you had distinctive gameplay on a per-leader basis, so there's less pressure on a given character in Civ 5 to be super unique because of that. Whereas with the gameplay pretty similar between the leaders and Beyond Earth, then you're going to be looking for differences, you know, more so than you might have in a previous game when there's more differences in the gameplay itself.
Now, granted, I mean, when it comes to the AI playing these factions, it could very well just come down to adjusting the flavors of the AI leaders to actually act differently. There is clearly no leader must go this type of affinity, just because if they land and there's none of it around, that would just basically shoot the AI right at the beginning. Yeah.
We're going to have very different strategy discussions with Beyond Earth. You know, in Brave New World, we could say, this is why when you play Byzantium, it's a good idea to found a religion. Whereas we won't be saying, if you're playing as Ark, this is why you should be going down knowledge, because you are Ark.
Yeah.
No, there's not that kind of analogous comparison.
Now, what could eventually get built, I haven't actually looked at the file, so I don't know if it's already built in there, but whether or not the AIs develop personalities based on their choices of what their pre-existing stuff is, like, so if they went scientists versus aristocrats or whatever, if modifications to their flavor numbers for various things were changed, would start providing more atmospheric changes. So the arc that went super aristocrat with early pioneering and other stuff is going to, say, try and shove themselves a bit towards more trade-based spying, and maybe they'll push more for flipping cities versus the arc that went engineers with the extra soldier and everything else that are going to push themselves towards destroying your cities and using spies differently. And whether or not they went knowledge versus might and stuff like that probably provide a bit more atmosphere in the style that people might be looking for.
Mega Dragoon, at a later post in our episode 213 feedback on CFC, says, in spite of Majin's exceptionally salty sauce, I feel that this game would be much more engrossing if it had developed the character of each leader's like Smack did. In the chat, the Star of Hope says, I think maybe we're missing who these people were. Who they will be during the game as they make a new life on the new world is flexible, but being entirely fictional organizations, it's hard to know who they were on Earth.
Yeah.
Two things. Number one, on the official Civilization website, there were some diary entries that were written from the perspective of each of the individual leaders as those factions were being introduced. Plus, as we're going to get to one of the Firaxicon panels, where Firaxis Games, the co-lead designers on Beyond Earth, Will Miller and David McDonough, said, just so you know, this was our take on the great mistake that helped us make some decisions thinking in terms of how the game was progressing, but it's not set in the game. You're not constrained by it in any particular way.
Yeah, there is some stuff, even in-game. Because, frankly, if you bought the game and you didn't look at anything before that, then you can only look in the game for the details of it. And that's actually perfectly fine, because if you can't look into the game to get the lore and you have to go to watch a Firaxicon panel or go check out their blogs or go read up other stuff that was done completely outside of the game to find the lore, then you're doing something wrong, because it should be in the game. And whether or not the stuff that they wrote pre-game release made it into the game, well, I guess people who actually look at the Civpedia will probably at some point say... But they do toss out little bits, like when you're on the loading screen, it's about the leader and how they look at things. The Arc Leader, she doesn't believe that greediness is bad. She just thinks that, you know, as long as she gets all the good stuff, it's good.
She's basically like, I'm out of here, suckers. I get to have all the fun.
Yeah, this is all mine. And if we happen to help you, as long as I make a profit off it, it's good.
The strange thing with those loading screen things is that they often point towards an affinity, if you like it, but it doesn't really relate to what you're doing in the game, so it can be kind of strange sometimes.
That's sort of what Starhope was talking about, knowing what they were like beforehand, before they got here.
Yeah.
So it's just not as prevalent.
Those are only one same lady doing the quotes. You don't hear, like, the individual leader saying it.
Yeah, and considering that they did actually hire a bunch of people to voice those leaders.
You could have had them read a few more lines.
Yeah, reading a few more lines would have made the game more atmospheric.
To any modders out there who would like to mod some of this stuff in and are looking for voice performers, you know, we're available.
No. What, you want me to do all the ARC quotes? Is that what it is?
Man, if only the leader of ARC were male. Man.
Yeah, same for Franco.
I'm not going to do an old lady voice for Elodie, sorry.
Aww. It'd be so natural.
Oh. I might not be the one that's getting the reach through the internet punch from Mackie first at this rate.
Someone just shot to the front of the queue.
I was sure it was going to be me, but not anymore. So we have a patch from Beyond Earth. Nope. Brave New World. They did fix a tech overflow bug that allow you to get a free tech each turn for multiple turns. Size of allowable science overflow is now set at 5 turns of science, same as in unmodified research agreements, or the unmodified tech cost of the last tech research, whichever's larger. So yeah, no more like multiple techs at once.
I enjoyed the sentence that immediately came after that. AI also understands this adjustment. Preemptive.
AI. Who told the AI about this, guys? Jeez.
When it comes to AI understands mechanic change, I always take I believe that when I see it approach.
Yeah, I think it's just more the not using mass overflow. So telling the AI, hey, if you're about to overflow more than 5 turns worth, you should probably pick something different.
Man, I can't remember a Civ game where overflow manipulation didn't become a significant thing at some point in its existence. The next thing under exploit, this one's pretty handy, fix the multiplayer bug that would allow a player to steal everything from another player when trading.
Yeah.
Yay!
I know multiplayer is a significant subset of those who play single player, and I know that the tech overflow bug was big, but to me, on balance, like, this was bigger, this multiplayer bug. What the heck, man?
Yeah,
that was bigger.
A couple gameplay things. You get some Conquest of New World achievements when playing the deluxe version of Scenario. A slight nerf to Tradition and a boost to Piety. Scale Warmonger penalties by era, 50% of Normal and Ancient, 90% Industrial, and then 100% thereafter. penalties for warmongering versus city states is halved, so Dan is probably happy about that one. Bust up all the city states, lol.
Yep.
added cocoa and bison resources from the conquest deluxe scenario into the main game. So you got a couple resources there.
Yep.
The cocoa and bison resources, that's a nice flavor addition, and I guess I'm happy about the conquest of the New World achievements being unlocked, but the changes to the social policies and the scaling of the warmonger penalties, those were the two bigger items under gameplay, I would say.
Yeah.
So basically, getting into Lang's Elite takes one extra policy, because that oligarchy that used to be on the side that no one ever took until, like, the last policy? Yeah. Now you actually have to take it.
Kind of in the way now.
And it's not just landed elite, it's also aristocracy. It comes just after you've done your national college, kind of taunting you.
Yeah, can't just plow into landed elite and get a lot of extra food early. On the culture side of things, like if you're just counting up cultures versus social policies and stuff like that, you should generally still finish tradition, but same time, so you don't have to worry so much about that. But I know I've looked at the farms and people are already talking about, oh no, I actually have to build a monument.
Unfair.
Yeah, I'm going to get used to that too as well. But I didn't focus anywhere near as much as that as I did on piety, because I've always really liked taking piety. We go from Ender tradition where you're now having to take something that you otherwise wouldn't have taken. There's now this one particular social policy under piety that I like to take, not only in and of itself, but because it led to other things. And now the Mandate of Heaven, which gives you the discount on all purchases of religious units and buildings with faith, stopped being a prerequisite for Reformation. And now it's just religious tolerance, where you cities that have a majority religion or also get the pantheon belief of the second most popular religion into Reformation. And I'm like, I understand why they made the change, but it's like, Well, it makes me think more about, okay, do I want to push on Reformation? Yes, I do. How am I going to balance that versus getting Mandate of Heaven in terms of the order, when, if ever? So I guess it's good in that way, because it's not just so automatic anymore, but I'm having a hard time getting used to that more than the change in tradition. But that's me. I don't think it's necessarily bad, but it's just kind of,
well,
I don't know.
I mean, they could have switched the two, so that the bonus for the second religion just is the one floating, so that you only really take it after religions have all been founded and spread all over the place. Because, I mean, realistically, early game, when you're probably going to take it, there's not going to be a second religion in your cities, and therefore it's going to be useless until much later. Whereas with the Mandate of Heaven for the cheaper cost, you could start with a tradition build, get a religion, and then jump into piety, go grab it, and therefore have cheaper missionaries for spamming out religion, and then reform at some other point when you're ready. I don't think, based on looking at it, that you're going to reform any sooner with this change than you would otherwise. You will hit the policy sooner, but you're not necessarily going to reform anytime sooner, because you still need to found a religion. And if you can get to that policy before you founded a religion, which is going to be most of the time, unless you get a bunch of natural wonders that give faith, or, you know, other such boosts, and or go for a pantheon that gives you an insane amount of faith, yeah, you're still probably going to be questioning going for Reformation quickly.
And on the warmongering penalties, with the penalties for warmongering versus city-states have, I predict a renaissance of play for Mongolia.
This is all about how many battering rams can I get?
Well, I was thinking in terms of the bonus that Mongolia already gets versus city-states.
Plus, doing it in the ancient, it's only 50% of normal, so 50% of 50%. Although I always found it annoying that city-states were high-level hate generators for when they only have one city, but if you feed them a city, then it went down to a reasonable level. So in this case, it's a lot less now. And it's nicer, because you can actually fight ancient era wars without having people still hate you for millions of years later.
4,000 years later, I still hate you for taking out that one city state in, like, turn 10.
You declared war on her friend who died in 2000 BC.
We hate you.
Not new issue to Civ 5, just saying.
Maybe we'll eventually get to it later, but given that there was a number of strategies starting to pop up around waiting till industrial before attacking anything, maybe this will help a little with that, in that the early aggressive AI that happens to go and beat everybody up isn't going to be necessarily hated by all of their neighbors instantly. And therefore, waiting before you do anything until the industrial era and you start getting ideologies might not be the best plan, because they might be really big by then.
What you're saying is Shakak just got more dangerous?
Maybe.
So we do have a few more patch notes here. This is mostly multiplayer stuff now. Players unready themselves if the host changes the game settings before the game started.
That was never cheese.
Never.
No.
Dan.
Why am I being cited here? Mackie, I don't know what you could possibly be referring to.
No, I doubt Dan was alone in this abuse.
But we don't get to harass Dan about much, though, hey.
The number of player slots available is not updating for connected remote clients when the host increased map size on the staging room. Did you actually fix that? It wasn't. Grammar? Fix an issue causing AI sieves that used to be players to still have the player's Steam name after the player leaves.
And if the other player came back and we were in another slot, then it was like there was Team Mackies in the game. That was really confusing.
Yeah. So a lot of big multiplayer polishing here.
Yeah, and one giant bug, because apparently a lot of people can't play multiplayer anymore.
Yeah, there's that. That's not in the patch notes. They don't say that they broke multiplayer for a lot of people. So. Yeah.
Trying to help community, try and get information, because coming on to a forum and screaming, oh, it's broken, they did it on purpose, blah, blah,
does
blah.
Does not help.
Yeah, it's jack and crap.
We understand your frustration, but...
That goes back to the criticism that's not constructive that we were talking about before.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
We broke multiplayer on purpose. Yeah, so people have to go buy Beyond Earth to play multiplayer now. And I'm like, wow, okay.
Sure.
That's a little bit of a reach.
But yeah, there's some issues, apparently. So there may be a hotfix. Maybe. Probably not.
Well, there may be. I mean, Casper Gim says, is this the final patch as we have called for, or will there be more? Well, I guess time's going to tell here. Doesn't break saves, apparently. If you want to get this patch, you're like, oh, I don't have it yet, you might want to log on to Steam. And it's about 177 megabyte download, which when I saw that, I was like, wow, that's a pretty substantial file. I wonder when it's going to finish downloading. Oh, wait, it's done. Visions of what my action would have been like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I said the patch, I would have been like...
You were like, that's what you would have been doing.
Big, huge games rises from the dead. Ryan Reynolds resurrects Big, Huge Games and announces Dominations, a new free-to-play strategy game launching for mobile services. We discussed this last in June 2012, where we saw the sudden and jarring demise of Rise of Nations developer Big Huge Games after Big Huge Games and its owner 38 Studios filed for bankruptcy and ended up shuttering the studio. What happened was that Reynolds acquired the rights back to Big Huge Games last December at auction, where they purchased the Rise of Nations, Rise of Legends, and Big Huge Games trademark combined for $320,000. In 2015, they are going to release Dominations, again, under the Big Huge Games title. It's going to be available for the iPhone, iPad, and Android through a partnership with the free-to-play juggernaut Nexon. Dominations, you'll be able to choose which nation to play as, where Reynolds says, quote, one of the maps starts covered up and you'll have to decide which direction you're going to explore. And that both serves to clear off the map so you have more room to build your city in. Dominations is a free-to-play game, and this is likely to cause some groans and concerns among fans of past Civilization and Rise of Nations titles. Explaining why Big Huge Games opted for the free-to-play route as opposed to the premium paid experience like other publishers are doing, and I'll use this as an aside, like Civilization Revolution 2, for instance, from 2K Games, developed by 2K China, Reynolds said that making the game free remains so that it can reach the widest audience. He also explained that while Dominations will have microtransactions, players who don't spend a penny will still be able to unlock everything. Quote, we're doing games on new platforms and that means you design them differently. The industry is very different now. So it's not saying that we're Big Huge Games means that somehow we want to go back to 2001 and make 2001 games. No, we want to continue our journey but with some of the philosophies of game design that we've always used that hopefully players will remember and like, quote unquote. So I guess time will tell. I wonder if this will be for real-time strategy games on the mobile platform what at least Civilization Revolution attempted to do for turn-based strategy games on the console platform, which is to try to translate that experience, but that's it, translate, not copy, because it is a different platform, so you have different design decisions, and quite frankly, you're targeting a different market here of gamer besides, to see if this will play out and Big Huge Games will be able to make a go of it again. But it's back in Reynolds' hands, because Reynolds had left Big Huge Games before it folded to go work at Zynga.
Yep. So, same old name, new direction, don't expect old stuff. They might eventually.
Presentations too, I'm afraid.
Well, they may eventually get to it. Who knows? Maybe if they get enough income off of this new one and the mobile / tablet / whatever market helps support it, maybe they will go back for something. Just for giggles.
Well, they might, or Rise of Nations 2 could end up being also on the mobile. Because they say, at least for now, they're done with PC gaming. They're moving on to mobile gaming. And, hey, you know, they're a company. They're looking to make money. All the more power to them.
Yeah, that's fine. Just don't, you know, to expect them to, why isn't this PC? Because they said up front. Doing mobile.
Why is this free-to-play with microtransactions? Well, they told you that's...
We said up front, mobile, free-to-play, microtransactions. Did you not get the memo?
Memos? Do we even use memos anymore? I mean, seriously.
Okay, the email, the Twitter notification, whatever.
Certain planning.
What?
Coming full circle. We talked about a patch that has been realized, and now there's a patch that's going to be realized.
Why are you making me work?
Why am I making you work? If you have to ask that question, I'm not going to give you the answer. I tell you what.
Unlike, well, pretty much ever in the Civ series.
You know where you're going with this? Yes.
Dave Hinkle, the 2K community manager for the Firaxis titles. They decided to let people know that there will be a Beyond Earth patch, and anybody who's ever played any Firaxis game, especially the Civ side, already knew that there was going to be a patch coming. But they decided to foretell some of those technical issues that they are looking to address. Keep in mind, they said looking to address, not that they are going to use this as the patch notes, as in it's already been patched. These are things they would like to fix. So there was issues with screen resolution problems. Apparently there's some startup problems following the opening movie. Crash issues. There's always crash issues, and they always try and fix those, so eh. Adding an in-game option to disable depth of field effects for players that prefer the game without it. Apparently, some people didn't like it. Little niceties. Ongoing updates to in-game, tooltext, blah, 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 blah. You know, trying to remove all the Civ 5 references. Correcting an issue where actions could be missed from an embark worker, like repairing a pillaged water improvement. Adding completed section to city production menu, because people apparently missed that from Civ 5, like, your building got finished building. Sometimes good to know. Adding more touchscreen control, pen support, blah, blah, blah. Apparently, achievements have an issue with max turns. Fixing some modding stuff that, well, was already in Brave New World. Investigating reports of potential multiplayer stability issues.
Potential?
Yeah. Wording. And, of course, they just want to reiterate that design is iterative and things will change, and they do look at the community. So they will take a look at feedback on balance and other such things and take those into consideration. Granted, this comes back to things we've said multiple times so far in this episode. If you give good feedback, they will read it. If you are just whining, they will probably skip it.
I do find it strange that they don't mention balance at all.
No, they have more information on balance changes as the design team has a chance to evaluate and implement.
Oh, all right, yeah.
Basically, they're not going to tell you balance changes right off the mark.
Yeah,
obviously. They kind of have to decide what they are first.
Yeah, some of the more technical issues that came up here, they're more readily evident.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Than some of the gameplay parts would be.
Yeah, does not work on my monitor. Okay, we'll fix it.
But I like the line about, remember the station at Depth Blue? It got nerfed a month before launch. Just in case you were wondering, is there actual precedent for what they're saying is going to happen? Yes, there is. And that's just only the most recent example.
Et cetera, et cetera. thread expands into things people want to see or people wanting to whine and complain. Some of these are good, some of them not so much.
Lexicon panel explaining the great mistake.
We made a very deliberate decision not to write this into the game and not to say in any interviews up until now what happened. And that's because we think it's just sort of more fun for everyone who plays if you get to sort of imagine for yourself what could have happened.
What you're about to hear now is not canon by any means. That means you too, Internet. Not canon.
Right. So these are what... We did this for kind of two reasons. One was because it was fun to, like, take the current map of the world and, like, kick it over and do stuff. But also because we wanted to set up the 8 factions that are in the game.
It ended up being a nuclear war between China and, I think, Iran over Afghanistan. Big nuclear war, then, which causes the ice caps to melt. And so it causes accelerated global warming, which leads to a situation kind of post-apocalyptic, which leads to us to the situation at the beginning of Beyond Earth.
Yeah, giving us a little bit on their guiding principles for developing this backstory that Teprock just summarized for us.
One was that even though all of this terrible stuff happens on Earth, at the end of the day, when the game begins, it starts from a point of optimism. Civilization is a very optimistic and aspirational product, and we wanted to keep that in our fiction. And the second thing is that it was simple. Because again, we wanted the player to fill in their own information about what actually happened. Right.
The Great Mistake is obviously a catastrophe. In fact, it's multiple catastrophes. The seeding and leaving Earth for a new planet represents the first step in sort of a general human resurgence and sort of a Star Trek future where we are knitting ourselves back together to go among the stars.
So the thing starts about 50 years from now, and there's this event called the Great Mistake. Then some indeterminate number of years pass. 4 generations is what we wrote. And this was kind of important because we didn't want to put an exact date on this. The nations get to this point where they're able to construct the infrastructure once again to send people to space. There's simultaneous discoveries of technology that will facilitate deep space exploration and travel. And the discovery of this thing called the inflection point, kind of this mathematical analysis of society and resource distribution and economic situation on the planet that determines that after a certain point, humanity will no longer be able to lift things of consequence out of orbit. Be a point where we run out of fuel. And this realization, coupled with advances in technology that allow for deep space exploration, are what kicks off the seeding. And the seeding is basically where the game begins.
We probably could have gotten the game going with just that. But we coupled it with the Great Mistake on the other side, because that alone is not enough. Just figuring out that we could go into space isn't really enough to start this game with a bang. No time given between inflection point reached and game begins. What that does is let the events of Earth continue to unfold in an unknown way.
After the Great Mistake and after this humanitarian crisis and these movement of peoples and the sea level rise, the nations sort of lose communication with each other. There's some loss of information. No one really knows what the Great Mistake was by the time you, the player, start the game.
They decided to disclose the Great Mistake backstory first to the people who were at Firaxicon, which I thought was an appropriate venue and time to discuss that for the first time.
When the fallout finally settles, one-third of the world's population lives in a nation that has suffered a nuclear event. The Fertile Crescent has been decimated, its arable land irradiated, and its population and infrastructure thrown into chaos. A refugee crisis on an unprecedented scale ensues as the populations of the Middle East flee their shattered homelands. The human tide pours into all neighboring regions. The economies of Eastern Europe and Russia stagger under the load, and their burden quickly begins to fracture the delicate Eurozone alliance. Simultaneously, the refugees flood Central and Saharan Africa, destabilizing many of the countries there and triggering a wave of civilian uprisings and military crackdowns as the besieged African governments attempt to maintain control. Eventually, a status quo is established, embroiling all global powers in a humanitarian crisis that exacts a massive drain on the world economy.
As years pass and the Eurasian world struggles to maintain stability, it becomes evident the extensive damage and fallout from the nuclear war has inundated the planet's atmosphere with greenhouse gases. Polar melting accelerates by an order of magnitude. Within a decade, both poles are ice-free half the year, causing worldwide sea level change and the sea to rise by 20 feet or more. So now that we have irradiated countries, we needed another reason to displace and constrain.
Right. What about the other half of the world that's not right on this map?
The biggest losers are coastal China, coastal India, the Americas, whose population displacement and property loss threaten to consume their already depressed economies. Worldwide diplomatic relations deteriorate completely. Many nations, particularly the more wealthy, established Western powers wall themselves off behind a seal of isolationist policies and military deterrence. The world enters an uneasy Cold War, an information dark age, where international commerce and cooperation effectively cease to exist. Notable exceptions are Australia, whose willingness to cut deals with its Southeast Asian and Islander neighbors forged the new Pacific Rim Alliance, the financial center, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Sub-Saharan Africa, whose nations find common ground in the face of the refugee crisis and forge the first ever African Union. Kind of the breadbasket, really. They feed the world
first
time.
At that point, we just let it go. We're like, okay, that's enough. That'll get things going.
Choosing the sieves for Brave New World. In the panel, obviously, they talked about how they went through trying to choose the sieves.
When we first started design of that expansion pack for Civ 5, we had 34 civilizations already in the game. And we also had a game that had been out for over 2 years. There had been tons and tons and tons of interest from the fans about, can our nation be in one of the next expansion nations? What about a small DLC? First question was, well, how many do we have? How can we find enough worthy contenders that had that kind of impact on world history that we like to have acknowledged? And it ended up that, well, Gods and Kings had 9 new civilizations. Gods and Kings did really well as an expansion pack, so why don't you go with 9? But then we had to figure out, well, how do we fill out those 9 slots? Have a couple selections that were ones that were really fan favorites. But just as important to us was dig up new parts of world history or culture that haven't been explored in the series before. And then we wanted to make sure that we're maintaining the right level of diversity in terms of geographic region and historical time period. And then the last thing that we wanted to focus on is different ways to play the game. We had some really good luck in previous versions of Civ 5 in coming up with civilizations that really shook up the play style.
It was kind of nice to hear from Ed about that sort of thing.
It became apparent right away that maybe the first 4 things we wrote down were not changing. First one was the number one on all the fan sites that the Civ had to be in Civ 5. This is the one that there were post after post after post saying that we know that Fraxis cannot possibly be done with Civ 5 because this civilization is not in the game. So you might have guessed, it's Shaka the Zulus. The second one that was sort of a shoe-in was a Civ that we kept missing from some of our historical scenarios. And we finally said, you know, we got to put them in. So that's how Maria Portugal got into the game. And then there was a nation who has been clamoring through fan sites to be in Civ. This talk has gone back at least to Civ 4, so that's how we got Casimir and Poland. This was one that I wasn't as sure was going to stick, but I had always been very interested in this country personally. Morocco. Proposed that, and everyone thought, wow, that's actually a really interesting choice. And then it got a little harder.
They talked about how they grouped different civs within areas.
The ancient Mideast, we could have Assyria, the Hittites, or Sumeria. Countries that were former European colonies that had much more importance on the world stage, the Australians, Canada, and then Brazil. We knew that we wanted to have a second representative of the native peoples of the Americas, and probably since we already had Aztec, Inca, and Maya, we wanted to probably have a North American one. The Inuit was definitely something that we considered strongly. We ended up deciding that they are really tricky because you can't find known documented historical leaders for them. And then the fourth area we were looking for a Civ was Southeast Asia. The Khmers, Vietnam, and then there was the whole Indonesian archipelago.
They even borrowed the methodology of CFC.
Initially, it was just put a tally mark for the ones you liked. But there were some that were kind of tied, and there were some that were kind of close, and we couldn't really have a clear-cut winner in some of these categories. I went back, and I looked at what they did for voting on Civ Fanatics. Loves these elimination threads. And that was sort of how we progressed. We started letting people have negative votes, and all of a sudden it came clear who we were going to go with. First of all, in that category of the ancient Near East, we decided that Assyria definitely trumped the other two because it had never been in the Civilization series before.
Southeast Asia area, we decided we didn't want to go to the Khmers. They had been in the game before. And Indonesia was very interesting, but we had that problem with no one being able to pronounce Majapahit. And I still don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. So we ended up changing the name to Indonesia. Indonesia is the number four country in the world in population, so they're worthy from that point of view.
There was one thing that I had raised in our Polycraft gaming group. We've mentioned Polycraft on Polycast before. It's our unofficial, official Minecraft spinoff. And specifically talking about that Brazil won over Australia and Canada.
For the former colonial nations, we looked at the fact that Brazil, at that point, hadn't hosted the World Cup, but we knew that was coming up, and that they're also going to be hosting the Olympics. And to us, that just sort of trumped Canada and Australia, and so it was Brazil.
And the comment was, seeing as how both Australia and Canada have hosted Olympic Games before, but not the World Cup, then the deciding factor among the Firaxis staff working on Civ 5 came down to soccer. And my comment was, I get that the sport is big, don't get me wrong. And then Candice Albanus stated, well, Dan, Brazil has more population. Sao Paulo alone has 23 million, and Canada has about just 10 million more than that. And my response was, that's true, but it's not so much that Canada wasn't included, but it was the reason that was cited. I was just kind of like, really? I was kind of taken aback by the response.
So if they'd said more about the culture and things of Brazil that make it unique and stand out, you would have been less. What?
Yeah, because I'd already accepted, okay, Canada's not in the game, I understand. I didn't even think, oh, Brazil got in the game versus Canada? Oh, no, for those exact same reasons. But then when it was cited, I'm just thinking, is he serious? Is this a joke?
I think they mean that more as a symbol of how Brazil is having a bigger role, kind of like the Olympics in Beijing a few years ago. I think it's more like Brazil is this nation that is having more power in the world, and so that's why they went with it. But maybe that's not a great explanation they gave.
No, yeah, no, because Brazil's power in the world is, like, minuscule compared to Canada's.
True, but it's expanding.
Not really. It's still pretty weak. I'm not talking military or anything. I'm just talking in general, like, compared to Canada. Anyway. No, I'm perfectly fine with Canada not being in it because, frankly, too many people are not smart enough to actually look up what Canada has done in history and therefore constantly get into flame wars on forums and everything else that, frankly, you just don't deserve it. Brazil and Portugal and the whole colonization thing, and yeah, there's thematic stuff that can fill in gaps. So it was perfectly fine that Brazil was in. But yeah, because they get soccer and we didn't. That's not really a reason. There's 200 million people in Brazil who may buy the game because of that. That has more logical...
That way we can believe, he says.
Yeah.
And it is about making money, so yeah.
Yeah, it's most gamers in Canada who know of Civ would have bought it already. With or without Canada, no one cares.
Yeah.
And then we had an interesting situation with the fourth one.
They bring up the Pueblo again.
Yeah, we'd heard that story before. We talked about the Pueblo issue and how the Shoshone came about.
We're still happy with the way it came out and the choice of going to the Shoshone. I think it was definitely the right thing for us to do.
How the ninth civilization came to be.
We got to eight, and we were sort of stuck. Venice is who it ends up with, you know, I've given that away here. But it was actually the case that I wrote Venice up on the board right away. Venetian Republic. And everyone looked at it and was like, duh, Venice is a city. It can't possibly be a civilization. So it was up there on the board, and it was totally discounted by everybody as not being a workable idea. And I tried to bring in maps showing, oh, look at the Venetian Empire. They're really, really worthy. And everyone's like, no, they're really just a city. So... we kept struggling with that we need a ninth civ. We want one that has a really unique play style. We thought, well, maybe do we do Italy? And we're like, but we already have Rome, so how do we do Italy? And finally, with this whole, is it worthy of being a civ, we started thinking, no, maybe you're right. It's not a civ. It's a city-state. But then we started thinking, what if that's the hook? What if the fact that they're a city-state is what's unique about the play style? There were two key moments where all of a sudden we decided that Venice was going to work. And the first one of those was when we decided the great merchants, what they usually do is they go to city-states and they have a little trade mission and you get a lot of influence with that city-state and a lot of gold back. Well, what if the merchants of Venice go to that city-state and they just buy the whole city-state? We ended up getting Venice to all the way work when we kept adding to the trade system. From this point on, Venice was sort of in place, but we made some late changes to the trade system. One of the things we did very late in the trade systems was the internal trade routes.
I like in that panel they talked about the Polish edition of the game that they did, which I didn't know about.
Cool.
And that was amazing.
Yeah, with the
special box art cover by some guy who does the art for the Historical Sims there. And I did not realize that the Historical Sim thing was so big in Poland.
Apparently it is.
Custom Polish box cover for Brave New World. Get your version of it somewhere. I'm not sure where.
One, fly to Poland.
Two, look on eBay. Guitars, an arm, and a leg.
Well, that could be step one.
Could be step one.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 441-221-288-7659. That's 441-221-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
You know, there's a couple of games we talk about sometimes. I'm sure we'll still find more things to talk about, actually, maybe. Because by the time we get done with Beyond Earth and with Civ 5, there'll be Civ 6. So.
What?
No, I'm pretty sure there'll be Civilization 7. Civilization 6 is too much pressure.
Yeah.
You have to go to 6.
No. It's too awesome. We have to go to 10 now.
Are you don't want to take it up to 11?
No. We'll have to follow the Apple way because Microsoft has agreed that from now on it shall be 10 dot something because that's what Apple said. And apparently Microsoft now has to do it. So then now we have to do it. It'll break. They'll write code so that if you're not 10 dot something, it'll just refuse to load it.
I don't know. They could go the Maxis route and just have in multiple of thousands. Civilization 2000!
Whoa. Maxis did really well over the long term, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. This has been episode 214 of Polycast with Matt Jin, Dan Q.
Hi, this is Polycast. We're excited to talk to you about our security services.
McAlua.
We're also excited to tell you all the things you're doing wrong so you can get them right.
And the Mean Team.
Stakes were made.
And myself, Tepok.
And a thanks, by the way, to the Star of Hope who inspired that closing line of mine because he typed that. He added, "We're currently feeling threatened by an aggressive neighbor, Mongolia, and we hope we can make a research agreement that might bolster our current defenses with more modern technology."
I am Mongolia.
Also, in other words, still trolling us again.
Wait, did they just say that it didn't actually look filthy?
Oh, yeah, I read this earlier, actually, but I'd forgotten about it already.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Let's see. Hold on. This is a Mackie's topic, by the way, so it doesn't...
It's true. Yeah.
Well, you know, you've already started with it. Go right ahead.
No, it's all yours.
No. You already have your opinion. You go for it.
What? No, I don't know.
I was going to go read it, Mackie.
I just said I was going to go read it, not that it was...
Oh.
And then I started writing things that were like headlines, like, this happens, then this happens, then this happens.
I'm sitting in my chair yelling.
Right. We're like, yeah, doing this.
This is how we work.
We're going down.
Dave writes, I yell. So we have...
No, I'm not logged in, Dan, if you want to repost the link I posted in our Skype chat. I forgot my password, damn it.
Did you try password?
Very funny. It's not that simple.
We had our writer, like, write up all the ways that we could travel at near light speed. We're like, oh, these are really cool. We're not going to use any of this in the game, but thanks.
Is that what you're saying?
Apparently so. I did not realize.
Mackie's nomming, isn't she?
No, that's not me.
Dan, are you nomming on your own show?
No, that's not me.
I'm not eating either, but I was handling something, so that's probably it.
It's a country that's featured down at Epcot, so if anyone goes to the World Showcase there, which is sort of a cheesy version of Civ, but, you know, it's there, and it does sort of make me think about things that we could put into Civ whenever I go there.
Kind of like how we have the combination of social policies and ideologies now with the Beyond Earth expansion pack for Civ 5.
The Beyond Earth expansion pack, Dan?
Beyond... Brave New World, rather. I guess I could have said Beyond the Sword, and then I would have been really, whoa, Dan, how old are you?
Well, they're not sorting it anymore. They get guns this time.
And lasers. Pew, pew.
Story time with Dave. Where did we leave off here?
Worst bedtime story.
Right, ever. Worst bedtime story ever.
Never sleep again.
Earn your keep, Madjin.
Yeah.
Start talking.
What keep?
Yeah, you're not going to get the 10% raise that I'm going to get.
Oh, well.
Yeah, I guess it'll only be 9.
Still get paid the same.
Please send all hate mail to your mom.
to your mom.
He brags in voice.
brag.
Record date November 8th, 2014. Phyroxicon Panel Clips, copyright 2K Games. Domination Sound Clips, copyright Big Huge Games. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth Sound Clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.